I mean, I was planning to do it at the idea session, but I was working on the kernel for this thing. A lot of stuff is working, and it has very interesting features that I guess we could take advantage of, especially for energy savings.
Mm.
So I'm still learning a lot about some features. For example, let me show you.
Okay.
I mean, it's all our code, absolutely all our code. So now, it's booting.
So when you say our code, what is that? You and
who? And Luis.
And Luis, okay.
Yeah, now interruptions are working, memory is working, sound is working, we have control of the disk, ATA is a kind of reduced ATA interface.
Hmm.
Pretty much everything is there.
Okay.
And the cool thing about this devices that, for example, you can set up the frequency of the CPU at a very fine granularity, not like Intel machines and stuff.
What kind of CPU is it?
ARM.
ARM. Okay.
Or you have two types of memory. One is faster than the other and bigger than the other. And I'm sure the power consumption settings are different for these two kind of memories. The cache is kind of strange because it's virtually addressed. There is no paging. It has a lot of different stuff that I guess we could use for like research purposes. And because all the hard stuff is already done, I mean, making the disk work and making the memory work, making the screen work, that was really the tricky part. But now it's more like open for ideas and stuff. So that's something I was thinking of working on, and I don't know, really depends on you. And in case we have some idea, because right now it's just maybe a hobby or something.
Well, my view is that whatever you do, I mean, so far this is your pet project,
yeah,
right? And here we are talking about your people, right? Let me finish. So I'm perfectly okay if you come up with a project with a research orientation that you builds upon the work that you have been doing so far, right?
Yeah.
And that if that is what you want to make your thesis, as long as we can publish, you know, 2 to 3 papers, good ones, I'm perfectly fine with that being your thesis. I don't have any problem with that. The key is to come up with the right kind of research questions that you can answer for your thesis, right, based on this work.
I
don't want to discourage you or anything, and we can certainly brainstorm and try to identify the problems. In fact, recently I was reading an article about the ARM processor being used in some netbooks, precisely for the, you know, I don't know, for power consumption primarily. I don't know if you know about netbooks, but netbooks are these really small laptops.
Oh, okay.
With I think they have no hard disk.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
And Intel is, you know, a major provider of hardware for netbooks. Now ARM is also, you know, entering the competition.
Okay.
And they actually, I don't know, there was some recent news, and you can find it on Google. If you just type ARM and Intel netbooks, you'll find something.
Yeah,
I think ARM was
quite different from Intel, so I guess, I don't know if it's open, if it opens like a new path for stuff like research, I guess.
So I mean, it could be that, I mean, this platform is certainly very exciting, you know, iPod and stuff like that, and given that it is mostly closed and it's all reverse engineering that you're doing so far to get your stuff working on it, it is somewhat not a conducive platform for people to develop on. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Many people don't want to do what you're doing. Right?
No.
I think most people don't want to
do
what you're doing.
Yeah.
Maybe some people want to do what you're doing, but I mean, the point is that this is cool, but we have to try and answer those 3 questions that I always ask you, right?
Yeah.
which is if we choose to work on a certain project, that project has to have novelty. Okay, and in this case, I think novelty may be obvious, but it also has to be non-trivial, which means, okay, you're doing it on an iPod, but can someone else do it very easily on some other kind of platform and have the same effect? Right. So, are there other trivial solutions that are available to the problem that you're going after? Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm seeing it the wrong way. I guess not the scientific way. The scientific way would have, I have some hypotheses and I try to prove it with experiments. But my approach was really, this thing has different features than typical OS. I mean, a typical machine for OS is like an Intel machine or something like that. So, and these features are not being used.
Hmm.
So, how could we use it? That's the thing, really.
Hmm. I'm not saying that's not the right approach. Or, I mean, there is really no right or wrong approach to research, but certainly there is a way to answer the question, is the research that you are doing meaningful or not? Okay, so now how you pick the problem, people pick it from different ways. You know, some people start with a hypothesis and then they try to validate it, which is sort of the traditional approach. Other people get ideas as they work on something very non-traditional, like what you're doing here. So I don't have any problems trying to get to the research problem going in your path.
Okay.
But eventually, the research problem that you pick
needs to be
justifiable.
Yeah.
Right? So I think what I would encourage you to do is to, you know, now that you have maybe some level of satisfaction with this work, that you're able to do several things, I think the time is right and you should slightly change your focus to thinking about how I can identify perhaps new research direction based on some of the findings of this work.
I was thinking of my research direction as power, because it's somehow easier to sell than performance, right? And that's the main stuff I've been working on lately. Hopefully some of that will get published. I hope.
It will get published, so...
Eventually.
I think that's the thing about research is... the lag between when you do the work and when it gets published is sometimes long, and in most cases it actually turns out to be long.
Yeah.
Right? Very few people get their papers published the first time they submit. Right? And that's, if you talk to even the guys at the big universities, remember Franz Kashoek? He was here, the guy from MIT.
Yeah, but I remember that they were the golden boys, and they get published everything they had. That's the impression I had.
Yeah, but the thing is that I don't know if you were at the meeting with the...
Yeah, you
were there, right?
Yeah.
So where he spoke about the fact that even they have to go through process of revision and rejection and things like that. So even the really famous guys do not get to publish their work immediately. So I think the real trick to, and this is one of the key points in research, is to have the patience and the sort of consistency to keep working until you're successful. That doesn't mean that all projects are worth keep going after continuously, right? There's some projects you have to be careful, because some people say this doesn't make any sense. You have to reevaluate your position and abandon it if it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But most projects, even the good ones, need to go through multiple cycles. So I'll give you an example. For instance, this paper from Wisconsin-Madison that got Best Paper Award in the USENIX 2009 conference, it was rejected in FAST very trivially. I mean, most people rejected that paper.
Which one?
It's called NVFS. Remember that was one of the projects that was presented.
The one about having parallel...
many file system instances and doing N-version stuff. So, FAST people...
I didn't like it either.
Most of the FAST people didn't like it either.
Yeah.
Right? So, in the end, what happened is that it got the Best Paper Award in the USENIX conference. And they did certain improvements beyond what they submitted to FAST.
Experiments? No.
In terms of just design.
Design.
That some people were really concerned with the semantics of the N-version and
okay.
and what happens to applications and stuff like that. So, you know, portability issues. And then they worked on some of the design issues and then they resent it to Usenix. It got Best Paper Award. Now you can say, well, these are different reviewers and maybe these reviewers were not as picky as the past reviewers and that's why it got Best Paper Award. But regardless, it got published in Usenix. There are some interesting ideas in there and people will read it and certainly you can claim that it is novel work, right, that it is research. Someone was the first person to do that. So, this is just an example of how even, you know, best papers get rejected maybe more than once before they actually get accepted, right? So, I think the key is that I've gone through this process many times, you know, rejection after rejection after rejection, right? And it's very frustrating and it's very hard to sort of keep going at it while people are telling you that, you know, it,
Actually, that's not the big problem. The big problem is that you get bored of working the same.
You get bored, yeah. But the problem is that research is really competitive. It's not straightforward. It's really, there are so many people who want to publish their work, right? So in the end, the papers that get published in the top conferences are the ones that have gone through multiple, so many iterations.
Yeah.
And then they finally are in a state where they are, you know, really good. Nobody can pick too many faults with it, right? On the other hand, if we look at our first submissions for any of our papers, there are so many holes there, right?
Yeah.
And if it does get published, in a way, it's not good for us either, because people who read it will say, okay, what nonsense is this? Because there are so many problems with it, right? So there is also good effect of getting all those comments back and trying to improve upon our work. And it does take patience and determination to keep going. One of the ways in which you can, you know, try to reduce the effect is by working on multiple things at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? So you're not stuck with this one project and trying to get it published, right? Because you have many, many different possibilities, which is what you've been doing, is the right thing to do. And it reduces the boredom to quite an extent, I think. That's a good strategy. I highly recommend that strategy.
Yeah.
So, in any case, we should probably discuss more about your direction, and I certainly see that power may be a good thing to go after, right? It is, I agree, easier to sell these days than performance. Right. Earlier, nobody cared about power.
Yeah, and reliability, I really don't care. I don't believe in. I mean, I don't feel it's that important. So power is more.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, different people have different things, right? I mean, reliability sometimes is connected to performance,
mm-hmm.
right? And then that can become interesting. But how do you make systems reliable, but at the same time get really good performance? Also, how do you make reliability simple, which is what we are doing with the software persistent memory project.
Yeah.
And the whole project is about reliability to a large extent and some other additional things beyond reliability. But anyway, coming back to your thesis, so I'm certainly happy with the, you know, with the choice of power. So to review, what are the works that you have done with power so far, which is one is SRC map.
The other map. SRC map is the disk one. The other is the first work I did at IBM. The
APOS.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which has another name now. But then,
okay. What is the name now?
It's something map, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Those two basically. And the latest work can be related to power.
You mean the IOD tube?
No. I don't remember the last name. The cache one. You know?
Working set.
Yeah, the working set. Yeah.
How do we relate that to power?
Because I mean, that relates to performance, and power relates to power directly. More misses, more cycles, more power. That's what we saw on April. Really. That overhead on virtualization for power is really just because caches are being made.
Mm-hmm. I see. So there is a connection between the APOS work and your working.
Yeah, actually, I've seen it, like, the working set project, it was kind of explaining all the stuff we saw on the APOS experiment.
Okay. So those two are more related to CPU power, right?
Yeah.
The first
star
map and...
Yeah.
And
going on the power direction, I guess one nice project to work on is the other project. Remember we had two projects in mind when I was in India, the one related to this and trying to model these powers, and that we decided to leave it for later.
Okay.
I guess that's our next project.
That was follow up on the SRC map?
Yeah.
How to...
Well, the idea was how to model power for this space.
I think it was about how to model performance when you consolidate workloads.
Performance and power.
And power. See, what we saw in the SRC map work is that there is not too much difference in active power consumption. Right, regardless of how many workloads.
Yeah, doing stuff or not, it's pretty much this. Yeah, so that means it's not a...
It was more to do with the performance modeling of consolidation.
Yeah, performance modeling. That's interesting, but that's not going through the line.
It's fine. I think power consumption is related to performance, right? I mean, a lot of solutions trade performance for power. Right, so you can save power as long as you're okay to lose performance, which is what SRC map does. You know, the CDF actually changes.
Actually, that's another question I had. For example, I see these guys, like these MIT guys, and for example, he was saying that all his life he worked in systems, doing the most diverse type of systems there can be, working on something, when working on something completely different. So how can these people can say one thesis with all that?
No, it's not one thesis. Okay, so once you become a professor,
then he started doing
then
all this.
You can do that, but as a student, you have to have some focus. Okay, so I would say in your case, your case is non-traditional because yours is at this point a little bit too diverse.
Yeah.
You've done more sort of broader things than, and you also had some focus, right, with the virtualization and working sets that direction. You had some focus there, but in general, it has been quite broad. It had been storage, CPU,
security
so many different things. And in some sense, it's nice because people can see the broad range of things that you have worked on and you have experience with. So when you send out your resume, it's, in a way, I can see it as being impressive because you worked on so many different things. But now, see, within the next 2 years, by the time you need to be more focused and identify the theme for your thesis. It is okay that you did so many different things and in fact good on your resume, but now to get a PhD, you need to start focusing a little bit more.
Okay.
So I'm certainly fine with, you know, whatever. If we can do something with that and, you know, justify it as a research, I think that's really cool and nobody's really doing that. So as research I don't see anything. So if you come up with some research problem or research direction that can be based on such devices and platforms, then I think that's really cool. In fact, Sajib sent me some article just yesterday talking about power consumption of...
He sent it also to me. Yeah, about how Americans are increasing their... They have like 30 devices or stuff like that. And most of those are ARM, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And maybe it applies, I don't know. And also another thing we were talking with Luis is that it would be the best, the greatest thing ever if we are able to publish in something like OSDI or something like that. And I'm sure to publish in OSDI we need a full system. I mean, or maybe some like little improvement of like technique or something, but it's much cooler to have like real system, right? Real OS.
So I think that what you accomplished is pretty impressive from a technical standpoint. Right.
Yeah.
So what you managed to do, reverse engineer the hardware on the iPod,
right.
You know, with the information that is available publicly, and write your own OS that actually boots on this sort of non-traditional hardware, I think that's really cool. I think a lot of people will be interested to read about it on your blog, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, try to hack their own iPods,
yeah,
following your ideas. I think that's cool. And,
yeah, well, that's not research. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think.
Well, I mean, we need to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. When you write about something like this and describe maybe some new techniques, you know, OS techniques that are specific to these portable consumer electronics devices.
Yeah.
Maybe power for consumer electronics devices. Using iPod as just a platform, right? But if you can say that ARM processor is widely deployed on a range of different devices, and we can write a mini OS that is power friendly or something like that, I think that's really cool.
For example, two problems I've been having. Like, well, it's not like I've been having some questions I had. For example, these two types of memory. I've never seen that before. One memory faster than the other. I mean, and one is very small, and in the Rockbox project, they use this small one to put the kernel on. But because it's so small, they can have to be very small. So I've been thinking, you see it somehow as a cache or something, I don't know. So that's like a research question, right?
Yeah.
That could be a paper, I guess.
It could be. One vision I have, maybe following something like this, is to claim that we can write an OS for consumer electronic devices which are low power, but I mean automatically it can dynamically adjust power states.
Yeah.
Depending on what it is doing. Right?
Yeah.
But I think there are some embedded OSs that address such platforms. I don't know how much work along power they do,
yeah,
like especially from a research standpoint.
Yeah.
So you might want to look at some of those papers that are already out there that address embedded OSs.
What was like the best conference to see embedded OSs, embedded stuff?
There are some journals on embedded systems.
On embedded.
But I think in terms of conferences, I really have to search.
Okay, I'll look. Okay.
Yeah, but I'll also look and get back to you on that.
Okay.
I'll try to send you a couple of conferences and journals that you.
Yeah.
In that area. I think, I mean, for instance, traditional architecture conferences, there might be some embedded systems work in that.
Yeah.
Even OSDI and SOSP, those conferences may have some embedded systems work in them. But
yeah.
Do any of them address dynamic power? I don't know. So that might be one direction to go after. Now, when you were talking about these two types of memories, what is the difference between these two types? One is smaller, the other is larger, but other than that...
And the smaller is faster, and I'm sure because they have like some different names, it's RAM something something, and the other is RAM DRAM something something, they might have different power consumption.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I was trying to measure, but I'm not able to get power measurements from this. But I'm sure it can be possible because the Apple always shows the battery levels and stuff. So. But I couldn't find an interface, but there might be some. And just reading from those memories and check, maybe one it consumes much, much, much more power than the other,
mm-hmm,
and stuff like that. And the other thing is that on this Pentium, on this Core to Duo and stuff, usually you have like four levels of different frequencies. Here you have, I think infinite.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to check how large is the the power difference between the smaller and the largest, and I mean maybe we can play with that also.
I think before you go in that direction for power for embedded systems, it might be a good idea to do some more investigation on power consumption for home embedded devices and other sorts of embedded devices. How much power they consume?
You mean if it consumes just two? I mean, if it's not representative compared to like a TV or something like that, that's what you say? No.
I think in either way, it's important still power consumption because a lot of these devices run on battery.
Oh yeah.
Right. So
if battery lasts longer.
That's true. So I think it is important to bring that issue up, which is battery life. Right?
Yeah.
And I think. It is also, I think what you're doing makes sense, which is to find the range of power consumption when the system is active, right?
Yeah.
If how much I can vary the power consumption.
Yeah. If it's like this, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. If it's like this, maybe the operating range is only 10%, perhaps it's... Actually, even 10% is good because you can extend battery life by 10%, which is not bad at all.
Yeah.
But... if it's much smaller than that, let's say less than 5%, then maybe it doesn't make sense, right, to think about dynamic power.
And also, I mean, for this, it doesn't make sense. How can the dynamic power be so small?
Yeah, that's true, because, you know, mechanical components...
There is a thing moving, it can't...
So that may be another direction for us to go towards, which is, you know... So that's along the lines of IoT too.
Yeah.
So if we can reduce head movement, then how much power can we save? I mean, I think to connect IoT to power becomes in a way simple, right? Because we can look at the power impact of IoT techniques.
Yeah.
And see how that goes. I think FS2 did something similar.
Oh really?
If you remember FS2, they actually were focusing on performance, but they also I don't know if they did experiments with power, but I remember at least one sentence in the paper saying that this also reduces power consumption because it reduces head movement. Now, to make this a real paper, which is complete, we need to measure the power characteristics of disk arm and motor movement. So we have to go more fine-grained. Maybe we need a more high-resolution power meter to actually look at those differences. So that may be another direction for you to potentially work on in terms of storage power.
Yeah. I think maybe it's because it requires so much energy to have the spinning, the disc spinning, that just moving the arm is just nothing compared to the other. But I'm not sure. Or maybe the arm is moving based on the rotation somehow. I don't know.
In standby mode, in active mode, the platter is always spinning. In active mode. And right now, the problem is that we don't have these speed step motors on the disk.
Yeah.
I mean, if we had slower spinning motors, then we could save some more power.
Yeah.
But even the arm movement...
should be significant.
Should take some power, right?
The thing
about the rotation is that
once it's rotating, you don't need extra energy.
Too much extra energy to keep it rotating. All you need is like already inertia is taking care of a lot of that momentum.
That's true.
So it might be a good direction for us to explore to see how much we can save by reducing this arm movement. I don't think there is a lot of work in that direction.
Yeah, but now energy is like the suddenly energy is money, so everybody.
Yeah. I think that's cool. I think the iPod stuff may have some potential, but I think a lot more research is required before we sort of make that a research problem. And of course, we need to identify something.
Yeah.
And one problem is, well, how do I build an OS that dynamically optimizes for embedded power?
Yeah. That's somehow Akshat's dream.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe that can be your PhD thesis, and you know you can continue working.
No, I'm just saying, because he was always speaking about this ideal way that I never understood him really. But the idea is that everything adapts to load for power. Everything. Even a scheduler is absolutely everything. Well, I don't know. And I was thinking, well, that can be a good idea because power is easy to sell, but I don't know. I need to think about it.
Yeah, think in terms of your problems and think in terms of those three questions I asked you to evaluate again, right?
But
I think there is potential. I think
what would be like a typical big question for life in research? I mean, for a big PhD question, what kind of question is that?
I mean, so what kind of research question?
Yeah, I mean, like your whole thesis is aiming to answer one big question. What kind of big it can be? I
think that sort of questions are very hard to identify for in our area, you know, systems research. The kind of pieces that typically come out are, you know, a bunch of different techniques that all address similar goals.
Yeah.
Right.
The power,
so that's sort of
format,
that's
yeah.
sort of the average and typical PhD computer science.
Yeah.
Right. If to have a single problem is really being fortunate, I think very few people get that opportunity to have one single problem that.
Yeah.
You are excited about
and requires 5 years
and requires 5 years of work or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the same time, other people are also excited about.
Yeah.
Right. The problem is that as soon as there is an interesting problem identified, several people work on it, and then you cannot claim that okay, I solved the problem for my piece, because a lot of other people also did something towards that.
Yeah.
Right. That's the real problem. As opposed to, let's say, physics, right? Let's say that you are the only person working on some really weird, really unique, shouldn't say weird, but really unique problem. And no one else is even interested about it, right?
Yeah.
And then, so maybe people worked on it before but were unsuccessful. And people are maybe interested, but they just give up because, you know, so many people have tried it before. And then you can say, okay, I worked on that one problem, right?
Yeah.
And then I came up with some solutions. Advance the state of the art beyond what already existed. We don't have that sort of advantage.
Well, there is one ANP complete medicine, but that's I don't mind that.
Yeah. So I mean, even for instance, that question which I Akshat or Akshat's favorite question is, how do you build an operating system that dynamically optimizes power for embedded devices? I think that's an interesting question.
No, he wasn't referring to embedded devices. He's talking about
in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, in general, it's an even harder problem because
you're
talking about arbitrary hardware.
Yeah.
Right? On the other hand, if we say for a specific kind of hardware with specific architecture, let's say ARM processor, which has infinite power states, two types of memory with different power consumption, if we assume a certain architecture, then maybe the problem becomes more tractable. But even that problem, I'm sure people have looked at in from different perspectives, right? So, but I don't see any OS out there that addresses that completely yet.
Yeah.
So it is still an open problem, and it may be a problem that you perhaps have some skills to solve because of all of your experiences with this platform. So you could, for instance, come up with an architecture that models the architecture of iPod, whatever it is that, and then see how many different types of devices it applies to. And then you say, okay, here's an OS that applies to this architecture and dynamically optimizes power for this architecture. And that can be worth a PhD thesis. Single problem.
Yeah. By the way, talking about that, I was thinking for the hybrid memory project, I mean, what if there is this type of memory which is really cheap and big and we could just plug it somehow to the motherboard and just map all these two memories to the same address space like these guys are doing?
See, the thing is that the difference here is that at least for the time being, you can directly access both memories from the CPU. The other, which Lewis's project, by the way, you know, feel free to participate in that project.
He was telling me to work on something, or work on Mambo, because he didn't experiment that much with Mambo. I was playing with Mambo. And because it was so slow, I was trying Mambo, trying to install Mambo on one of those huge machines here in, but, you know.
So, for instance, you could perhaps work on one of the aspects of that project. If you and Lewis work well together, then it might be a good project for you to get involved, and it aligns with your power theme for your thesis as well.
Yeah.
And we certainly can use help in that project to speed it up, right? And so. With that project, we have this, you know, the flash has this problem that it is, NAND flash is not directly addressable by the CPU, or at least given current technology. Maybe in the future that will change.
Yeah.
But right now it's not possible. Because NAND flashes need to be written in pages. CPUs don't write in pages, or read from in pages. So that's the real problem.
Yeah.
So maybe you can, you know, instead of just thinking about like a really general question, which is how do I design an OS for such platforms, you can say, well, how do I design, let's say, either a CPU scheduler or a memory manager, any one of those components of the OS that are specifically for dynamic power optimization. You just look at one of those problems instead of saying I'm going to solve all problems.
Yeah. But then why do I need a kernel for trying that?
Why do you need a kernel for trying that? Because you're talking about a specific architecture, let's say the ARM architecture. You can certainly use Linux on ARM.
Yeah.
And modify Linux. Right, you can do that. But maybe the kind of techniques that you are suggesting are not easily integratable into Linux. Maybe possible, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you have some other different architecture in your OS itself that is more conducive to dynamic power optimization.
Yeah, I guess that's argument that is pretty just saying whatever. Actually.
Yeah. I mean, these devices are also interrupt driven devices.
Yeah.
And so maybe you can have some different kind of architecture for the OS that is designed for low power, right? And maybe there are some hints from the OS to the hardware or vice versa that you can employ to make better decisions within the OS.
Yeah.
So you can do some of those things. The hardware doesn't know what needs to be run. The OS knows what needs to be run, but maybe it doesn't know how much resource is actually being used on the hardware. So maybe there is some feedback between the OS and the hardware that can potentially help further improve power consumption.
Yeah.
And this is just, I'm just, throwing out all the possibilities. Maybe not, some of them don't make sense. But,
I think it's up to yeah. What to do?
But at this point, I think you have several choices,
right? You have several different directions that you could possibly go into in terms of your power theme. You could go into the storage theme, you could go into the, you know, more in terms of the working sets and, you know, expand along that theme and connect that to power, right? Because the working set so far doesn't connect to power.
Yeah.
So you could explicitly connect it to power and come up with a new project, right? And or you could go into this direction.
And also, because all of that is kind of newer, kind of expecting what people say about our submissions, maybe for the working set, people say, but this is completely crazy, it's not making any sense, or maybe, I don't know.
But that's, see, the thing is that those are the papers that I want to read, right? I mean, otherwise the papers are just incremental improvements over what already exists. It's only when you have completely new direction and completely new way of looking at problems, that's when people get excited to read those papers. Of course, there's also a negative reaction that, it, you know, some people have very...
Yeah,
I mean, they have their, you know, very strong opinion, and they have a certain way of thinking, so something completely new comes in, maybe they are not ready, or maybe rightfully they are wrong, they are against the idea, that it doesn't make any sense, and as long as they list all the reasons, I'm happy to accept it, right? But you cannot just say, okay, it doesn't make any sense, you know, working sets the old problem.
Yeah.
You tell me why the current paper, what are the deficiencies of the approach that we are suggesting, right? And what has already been done, you know, what are the techniques that are already do what we are doing, right? If they can list all of that, then maybe we should reevaluate and say, well, this direction does not make sense.
Yeah.
Because we forgot about some other piece of work that the reviewer pointed out that already does this stuff. Right?
Yeah.
So I think researchers have to also be humble, right? So when someone points out that you're wrong, you have to have the humility to accept that you're wrong and say, okay, well, we made a wrong choice and it's not the end of the world. It's not that I'm completely run out of ideas. Right, I have so many different ideas that I can potentially work on. Let me just work on something else. Right, and this time let me be more careful so I don't repeat the same mistake I repeated in the previous round. Right, so I think it's all a matter of perspective and how you think about it, and how you you know, incorporate your feedback into your research. If you take it in a positive way, you'll be a better researcher. If you take it in a negative way, you'll waste time. Right? So,
you know, just, yeah. Yeah. When we get those papers, that we're getting on like 2 months, right? You know.
Yeah. What?
We sent it to, the working set one? Yeah, we have like four or more papers from the
ASCLAS.
Yeah.
And I think you sent maybe another paper to middleware?
Yeah, no, we sent it to, I don't remember.
HPCA?
HPCA, yeah. Which is these days, I'm sure.
See, you are in a very fortunate position that you don't remember where you submitted papers because you submitted quite a few of them.
Four.
So you are in a really good position compared to a lot of other
at
people.
At least one of four. That's all I'm asking. Not even half one of four.
Yeah, so we have SRC Math and we have IODDU. I think you have some thinking to do with respect to your thesis, right? But other than your thesis, there are some other items that are sort of easy that you can deal with. And I think you have this bioinformatics work as another paper.
Yeah.
That's going to add to your resume. I think that's really good because you did all that work already. So it's just a question of maybe doing a few more things and wrapping it up and sending it out. And it would be another paper with you as first author, right? And I think Sajib is also involved in that paper, right?
Yeah.
So he also gets a paper, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's good for both of you guys to send that out and get that published.
Yeah, the next step for that was to make BLAST look bad. That was the main idea. one idea for make glass look bad is to use it with a large sequence in a small memory.
Mm.
It would swap a lot, so it would be awful. So that was the only experiment.
There was also this question about accuracy, right?
Oh yeah, but Professor Giri was supposed to, because I have no idea how to analyze that. That's the problem.
Yeah, so maybe we should set up a meeting with him and find out how to wrap it up. I need to go back to the...
Well, the main question is, does he have all the data he needs for doing that first?
I think he does, because the data is from a website, right? So you send a query to the BLAST website and you get back the results.
Yeah, but
and
he needs to compare it with our stuff, right?
Yes. And he needs to, so there has to be some way to automate that process, without which it's going to be really hard, and manual process almost impossible, right?
Yeah.
To do it for several sequences. So, I guess the first thing to do is to come up with a standardized format for hits, for using our approach and BLAST, and find out how much overlap there is. And which ones are unique in the first solution and unique in the other solution, right? So we have an output which is common, unique one, and unique two.
Yeah.
Right? That's really what we're looking for. And then we can come up with a metric for quality, and given this data, the set of unique one and unique two, we can come up with a metric for each of those techniques, a quality metric. And for the quality metric, I think Giri can certainly help us, but I think what he might not be able to do is to actually come up with those three sets of results for different sequences.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll get that data in that format, and then, that's pretty much it. Yes.
Yeah, so unique, these are approximate, right, for BLAST at least, and I guess we are also doing approximate or exact?
Yeah, approximate.
Approximate, so the sequences and offsets, right, in the original sequence where it appears.
Yeah.
So I think given those information, we can come up with quality metrics for both of them.
Okay.
And I think that will, you know, and of course the performance comparison, which is to make BLAST look really bad, I think, like you said, that's sort of easy.
That was something like to add on the introduction, like a nice point. I mean, BLAST, I mean, as time goes by, I mean, BLAST will even be worse because sequences are getting larger and memories are not getting larger at the same time. But, well, you can have as large as memories you want, but, I mean, it will be very expensive, so what?
I mean, the other interesting thing that could be done is to use our methods on flash memory. The random access.
Yeah.
The only thing we do is random read.
Yeah.
And we can actually, that can be interesting to people who are doing...
That's true. We need to do that, Yeah. That's the most obvious thing.
Because flash memory, random reads are the strongest point of flash memory, and we don't really do any writes with these search queries.
Secondary storage, hash structures. Yeah, that's the best thing for. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we could also.
And we're not even making writes; it's just plain
read.
Searching. Yeah. Read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Now, the problem is that if we do flash, then all the disk results seem irrelevant.
Well, for comparison, it's all over again. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing,
But it will be fast.
Yeah.
It will be fast because your experiments will run a lot faster than before.
Yeah.
And maybe it's good to have a comparison with disk, flash, and all.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, let's have that thing done once and for all.
Let's spend the next, few weeks and get it done nicely and have a paper that we can say, okay, that's reasonable work, right?
Okay. It's much fun working on these.
Yeah, I'm sure, but you're very close to getting done, right?
Yeah, I know.
I think the next part of that is thinking.
Yeah.
Thinking about what to do with all of the experience you had.
Yeah.
Did you guys talk about the bonus stuff? Because I didn't hear back from any of you about what you
did. Actually, I don't know.
You don't know? So you never spoke?
No. The last thing was, I knew that Sajib and Luis were talking about it on mails, but I haven't read all the mails. Actually, I haven't read a lot of mails. You know, actually, you were on those mails, I think.
I was on a couple of mails, but there was no resolution to the.
That's the last thing I know.
I mean, all I need to know is, do we do bonus or not do bonus? Okay. For me, it's very simple. If you do bonus, then we do bonus. If not, we don't do bonus. I've given you all the information, and really, but I need to know what we chose.
Everybody says I don't mind, so I don't mind.
You don't mind either way.
I prefer not bonus. Yeah.
You prefer not bonus.
Yeah, I'm moving to the same room with Duke Carlos, like that. So now I can save a lot of money. So now I'm cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So how is he doing? I mean, how is his experience so far with FIU?
He had bad economical. He had huge economical problems because the thing, you know, when you get to FIU, you are supposed to pay a lot of money, and nobody tells you that.
Oh, you mean because of the tuition and...
Tuition and a lot of stuff. So he was, after a couple of weeks, somebody told me that he was eating, like, one can of beans per 2 days, something ridiculous,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So then he told me, and then I told one friend, and then he was okay, and now he's okay.
But he's getting paid, right?
He's getting paid, and also because in the summer you get lower salary and stuff. So he was getting some issues. So now he's fine, and now he was freaked out because of the decrease of salary and everything. So he told me we should be sharing a room, and I was like, okay, so let's share a room.
Now, how is it that in summer you get reduced salary?
I mean,
I didn't know that you get reduced.
You no, it's not that you get reduced salary. It's that, I mean, the salary for all the months are not divided evenly. On the summer you get less, on the spring and fall you get more.
That doesn't make any sense. Why would?
I don't know. And he got in the summer. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's of course not usual that the students come into the summer, they come into the fall. But I don't know why we want to do something like that. And to me, it doesn't make any sense. Anyway, I mean, I guess there must be some reason for why that's happening.
Yeah, but he's fine. Now he's fighting with the usual stuff, learning Genie Club and that kind of the typical thing.
Okay.
He's fine, he likes what he's doing. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know that he's working on some parallel file systems.
Yeah.
Stuff with Ning.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another thing which I wanted to talk to you about is to. There are several openings now for PhD students, especially because Jason got some money. He got some money, and we have this new grant, and you need to hire at least one for our lab. So I've asked Lewis and George, they've sent out emails to them.
Yeah, I sent emails to the university.
You did send?
Yeah, but I don't know what happened.
How about, maybe Dulcardo will have better contacts than me.
I'll ask him. Actually, he was telling me. Yeah, he sent a couple of mails to some friends and stuff, and the good ones that are interested, the good ones are not that interested, and some students that he told me that had very low grades in the GRE and stuff, those are the ones that really wanted to come. So that's not good.
That's interesting. I wonder why. I thought that the...
And the situation is very bad, so I really don't know.
Hey, come on in, Daniel. Come have a seat. You're almost done.
So, I guess to wrap up, Ricardo, the bioinformatics work is what you plan to work on?
Yeah, and also the hybrid memory both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there are two of the other projects, which is the working sets,
yeah.
Right? I think there is more work to be done in that project, perhaps. Things that we didn't do in the previous round. We planned to do some of them, but we didn't have time to do it, or...
Well, one thing was to try and for the benchmark. Well, I need to think about it. I don't remember. But there were some things.
You remember
there were
a whole bunch of issues that we left for later, and then we said, okay, we are going to do them maybe for a different paper or maybe for a revision.
Yeah.
That was, you know...
Yeah, I don't remember anything.
And then for the IODDUP work?
For the IODDUP work, well, something I was thinking of doing is, the ideal thing would be to have the design for a new scheduler that takes into advantage of the characteristics we saw for Kanban.
Mm.
Or a new replacement strategy, not just comparing R to LRU, having something new.
Mm.
And for that, I could use the simulator as well.
Hey, how are you? Well, you're welcome to join us. We're going to talk about some of those issues that, with respect to software persistent memory.
Yeah.
You're certainly welcome to join us.
Okay. Hi.
Yeah. We have one chair left, though. We need to get one additional chair. So Ricardo, we can talk more later.
Yeah.
And in the meanwhile, you have several things to work on, so I guess you'll be busy anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.